Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined by Peter Flaherty, and I'm coming to you, Peter, from the beautiful state of North Carolina. How are you doing?
I'm doing outstanding. It's a road game. I wouldn't call it a road game, more of a neutral site game for you today down in your old stomping grounds in North Carolina.
Really, in my heart, it feels like a home game, but I guess you're right. It can't really be tender, one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a little bit of a different schedule for us this week. I'm traveling down here for the NHSI, USA Baseball's annual high school tournament that's kicking off this week in Cary, North Carolina. It's a loaded field of prospects. I'm sure next week on the podcast we'll break down everything that happened there. But yeah, just switching up the schedule a little bit just to make sure we could get you your weekly draft content in and on the feed. But the stuff we're actually going to talk about today, Peter, actually probably starts with a bit of a disappointing note. We've now got back-to-back podcasts where we're leading off the draft show by talking about an injury to a college outfielder in this year's class. So typically we get through our injuries early in the year and then it's smooth sailing. We haven't had a lot of pitcher injuries, which is good, knock on wood over here. But Wake Forest center fielder Ethan Conrad, in between our last episode and today's episode, we heard that he was going to have shoulder surgery and miss the remainder of his season. Sounds like he's going to undergo that shoulder surgery this Thursday. Jacob Rudner has the full piece on the site kind of breaking down that situation. But it is a bit of a bummer, as it always is when players get hurt. It's a blow to the talent of the draft class. It's now two high-performing college outfielders and college bats that were pushing towards first-round status. Who are now hurt. I mean, Conrad was having a tremendous season early this year, 21 games. He was seeing 372, 495, 744, seven home runs, more walks than strikeouts, playing center field, making the transfer from Marist to Wake Forest look easy. So what are your thoughts on this news?
Yeah, tough blow for Wake Forest on a team level. And then from a draft standpoint, this one's a little trickier because it's a shoulder, kind of one of those body parts and injuries that make you raise your eyebrows a little bit more, but hopefully everything goes smooth surgery wise and recovery wise. I mean, he's a really fun player from a tool standpoint, elite body. He can really run. He's got power, contact skills are plus, just checks a lot of boxes, including the makeup one, which is a really nice cherry on top. So appealing up the middle profile. Unfortunate that we've seen the last of him collegiately and wish him the best in his recovery.
Yeah, it is a bit of a bummer. And as I'm looking just back at his performance over the years, like, he has done nothing but perform basically everywhere he's gone. I mean, he had 2 years at Marist. He hit over 300 each of those years. He went from 3 home runs to 9 home runs. He's played in a number of different summer leagues. The Cape Cod League last summer with Bourne. He's played in the Perfect Game Collegiate League. And I mean, has really just seemingly been the same hitter wherever he's playing, regardless of the competition. I mean, I imagine you got a chance to see him in his 30-game stint with Bourne last summer. I'm not sure if you saw him in person or not with Wake, but I mean, his track record as a hitter is pretty immaculate, and I wonder if he has just done enough and the tool set is such that someone is still going to take a shot on him in a pretty good spot in the draft this year, despite the shoulder injury and maybe the questions that'll cause for him moving forward. Because like you had mentioned, on top of the performance that I was just laying out, the tool set is pretty appealing. It's a lot of physicality. He's a left-handed hitter. He's a big guy. He's got power. He's got speed. I mean, in the first mock draft of the season we did, we had a scout take him inside the top 10 picks just because of his pure hitting ability and that combination of a physical tool set. So I guess at what point in the draft would you expect this to cause him to slide? The shoulder is kind of a tricky one for me to evaluate right now.
Yeah, shoulder's tough. I got a good look at him, a good handful of looks at him on the Cape, flash the tools that we were discussing, and then seeing him up close, like it's a legit big league body. It's a really appealing blend of size and athleticism and positive physicality. And all he did is perform at a really, really high level. I think one swing that stood out to me was later on in the summer. He let off the game. First pitch of the game is a fastball up and away, drove it off the fence in left center field, stand-up double. And I mean, he affects the game in so many ways. Like, with the tools that he's got. He moves the baseball, he drives it. He's an effective base stealer and an effective runner on the base paths. So, I mean, a shoulder is really tough, but in looking at this draft class and just sort of how, I guess, murky it's become with, mm-hmm. with how everyone stacks up, I think that you can kind of bucket guys to an extent, but exactly where they go, is we'll only find that out in a few months. I mean, it's a profile that I'd still be comfortable taking in the first round. I don't know how high in the first round, mm-hmm. but it's still a first round profile for me. Like, I'd probably take him above Brendan Summerhill at this point, potentially above Cam Cannarella. I think he fits in that conversation with those three guys.
Yeah, we have him ranked currently number 22, I believe, on our draft board. 22, right behind Cam Cannarella and Brendan Summerhill, who you just mentioned, with Clemson and Arizona respectively. That has him as the number 5 college outfielder in the class, with Brandon Compton of Arizona State right now in the middle of the first round for us at 15, and then Jace Laviolette, number 9 on the board, obviously the Texas A&M outfielder who entered the year 1-1. But I mean, in looking at like what Brandon Compton and what Jace Laviolette have done this year, both those guys are still hitting under 300 as it stands here, with 31 games for Jace, 32 games for Brandon Compton. So both those guys have just more swing and miss questions than I think Ethan does at this point, just given how highly he's hit. So I could still see a team just saying, I don't know, maybe it's like the Chase DeLauder situation where you look at the injury and he still goes in the middle of the first round because he has the physicality, he has the tool set, and he has the performance. So maybe it's something where, I don't know, I might get too pessimistic and teams will say, hey, it's hard to find this sort of tool set with this sort of college production, because, I mean, he was tracking towards being a top of the first round pick.
Yeah, I mean, hey, back half of the first round, picks 20 to 30 and however long the first round extends, technically, definition wise, I mean, that's where I'd have him right now and be comfortable pulling the trigger. I just think from a tool standpoint, and especially when you look at everyone else in this class, like even with the shoulder, which is obviously going to turn some teams off and potentially rightfully so, but that, mm-hmm. that set of tools is really hard to come by. And I don't think that there are many people that can potentially match it, at least early on, mm-hmm. in this year's class, especially in the college outfielder side. Like from a tool standpoint, like from an all-around tool standpoint, like I'd put him ahead of, you know, I'd even put him ahead of Compton, because Compton's offensive profile is what's carrying him and buoying mm-hmm. him. It's comfortably plus power with a potentially above average hit tool, and the defense is the defense.
The tool set with both Cannarella and Laviolette, those would be the, like, Cannarella, Laviolette, and Conrad's just tool set would excite me the most, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm with you. So I guess long-winded answer short, still a first round, back half.
Mm. Cool.
What about you?
No, I think that I'd probably take him there. I mean, maybe as we get down the board, there's some, I still really like this high school class, and it feels like a lot of these high school players are still playing well. So depending on the bats that went in front of me, but in a vacuum, I still feel like I'd be pretty comfortable taking him in the first round. Like it's not a profile that scares me too much. Although I guess with this one, a lot of it is just going to come down to what the doctors tell teams on draft day, how comfortable they're feeling.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Cool. Well, today I also wanted to get into a piece that I wrote for the site this week, Peter, which was really trying to get into the weeds on some of the top college arms in the class. Now that we've got a decent sample of innings for most of these pitchers, 8 weeks for most of them, and look at like year over year arsenal changes. We went 25 players deep in this piece, and it was a lot of fun to get into the weeds at this level and look at how pitch usage has changed, how stuff has changed, if there have been any new pitches added to pitch mixes, if anything has been scrapped, and just like taking a look at like what the overall look of pitchers are this year. It was a lot of fun for me to write. Hopefully you guys will have some fun digging into it. We got pitch type tables and usage patterns for all these players, with video for a lot of the pitchers as well. But I kind of wanted to just open up the conversation and see if there were any pitchers specifically of that grouping who stood out to you, or just differences, I guess, that are impressive to you. I've got a couple names on my list if you don't want me to put you on the spot initially, but I feel like we could just talk through some pitcher transformations today.
You took the words out of my mouth because I was gonna let you drive the bus on it,
Yeah.
and ask you what pitcher stood out to you, and we could go from there.
Well, the first one that I wanted to talk through is actually Anthony Ianson at LSU. I feel like because he is not Cade Anderson, he maybe gets slept on a little bit because Cade Anderson has just been so good as the Friday night guy for LSU. But he stood out in this exercise just in terms of the year-over-year jump in his overall miss rate. There were only a handful of players who jumped more than 10% in the total miss rate they were generating. He was one of them. He was third on this list behind Logan Lunsford at Wake Forest, who we can maybe get into, and behind Liam Doyle, who we have talked about on almost every podcast probably this spring. So I'm not sure if we need to go too far into the weeds with Mr. Doyle. But Ianson stuck out to me because entering the year as a transfer, he had a really strong reputation as a really advanced strike thrower. And then basically across the board, he has taken a jump in stuff this year. The power on all of his pitches is better. He has added more than a tick on his average fastball velocity. He's added almost 3 ticks on his slider. He's added a tick and a half on the curveball, and he's added 2.5 ticks on the changeup. A year ago, when he was in the Big West, he was throwing his curveball quite a bit, and that was actually the pitch that got hit around most. And so seemingly he's made a pretty simple change in just throwing the curveball quite a bit less, 16 points in terms of percentage usage less frequently this year. And all of that usage has gone into the fastball, the slider, and the changeup. And he's looking at a career high in strikeout rate. That strikeout rate has gone from 26.4% to 37.1%. He's continuing to throw strikes. The strikes are down maybe a little bit, but he's still been, I believe, number five in the SEC in terms of strikeout minus walk rate, behind names like Liam Doyle, Cade Anderson, Pico Cone, Kyson Witherspoon, Anthony Ianson. And three of those names, I feel like at this point, are pretty solid first rounders. And I'm wondering how far behind that group Ianson might be, just given how consistent he's been, given the quality of the four pitch mix, given his just history as a strike thrower. This exercise really made him more of a compelling pitching prospect for me.
Yeah, there's a real, I'd say, appealing ease to which he does everything. And I think that he's flown under the radar perhaps until now, in as it compares or when comparing him to sort of the top pitchers in this year's class. And he's certainly still a tier behind them. But I mean, you're talking about a no doubt starter with a track record of being an advanced strike thrower. Like, this is a kid that knows how to pitch, I think. And it's a point I've made a handful of times, but it's a quality that's become increasingly rare in today's game, especially at the amateur level. Like, he's a pitcher. And I think I'm most encouraged, and it's hard not to be, by sort of the natural step up and I guess stuff that he's taken since last spring. You hit on it. The fastball usage is up. That he's basically a fastball slider guy now, largely, and will occasionally mix in his curveball and a seldom used changeup. But the slider for me is a plus pitch. I think it has a miss rate north of 50% this year. It might even be 55% on the dot. It's effective against both righties and lefties. He manipulates its shape really well. Curveball is distinct in shape. It's bigger with depth. And then the changeup he kind of introduced last summer, and is clear it's kind of he's gradually continued to mix that in. So, I mean, it's a legit four pitch mix strike thrower. I'm comfortably pulling the trigger on him with my second pick in the draft without a doubt. Like, I think that's a really high quality guy you can get in the second round.
Yeah, that slot makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, coming into the year, I feel like the fastball you could maybe say is a little bit fringy, and you weren't quite sure if he had an out pitch. It was more of like a solid average mix across the board with above average command. But given how you're talking about the slider, given the power he's added to the pitch, given the results he's had with the pitch in the SEC, and just like his jump in strikeout rate while maintaining a pretty solid walk rate is impressive. And then tracking back through his career, I mean, he walked 6.5% of batters with UC San Diego in 2023. Just 7 starts, 29 innings then, and more of a sample, 82 innings as a sophomore in 2024, still a 7.5% walk rate. That's up a little bit this year. It's at 8.4%, but when you're jumping 10 points in strikeout rate and you're still walking less than 9% of batters, I think it's a trade-off that basically everyone would take, and I feel like he's thrown enough strikes historically to feel pretty good about that starter profile, and just the fact that he's added a lot of oomph, a lot of power to the entire arsenal, maybe you can get a little bit more optimistic for what you're projecting for his pitch grades moving forward and just the impact he'll be able to have in pro ball. So he's definitely a name that stood out, and just his start-to-start consistency has been impressive as well. I think his one kind of hiccup this year was against Missouri. He only lasted 3.2 innings, gave up 7 hits, 4 earned runs, struck out just 5 batters. But outside of that, he's been pretty competitive. Maybe you'd like to see him pitch a little bit deeper into games, but I don't know. I think it's been a pretty solid season for him.
Yeah, and after those two little hiccups against Mizzou and Texas, in his last two starts against Mississippi State and Oklahoma, Oklahoma being the really impressive one of the two, really even the Mississippi State one, struck out 12 across 5 innings, but across 10 and two thirds innings, he hasn't allowed an earned run, 20 Ks to 7 walks. And there's just a real, as I said, it's like a super simple and repeatable delivery, and a very, I'd say, appealing ease to which he does everything. And he's very mechanically sound. So checks a lot of boxes.
Mm-hmm. I guess the other obvious one to talk about here would be Logan Lunsford, because he does top the list that I had mentioned when getting into Anthony Ianson in terms of just year-over-year miss rate differential. He's getting more swing and miss last year at a second than he did a year ago, at a significant rate. It's a 21% jump in swing and miss overall. It's kind of shocking, that jump. He entered the year as a fairly light throwing pitcher. He hasn't added a ton in terms of fastball velocity. He's still sitting right at 91 miles per hour with his fastball, but he's added nearly 6 ticks to the slider. He's looking at a 42.1% overall strikeout rate through his first 9 games. He's got an overall miss rate of 42%. Now he has 2 distinct breaking balls, where a year ago it was kind of this curveball slider in the mid-70s that didn't really have a lot of teeth to it. That jump is maybe the most significant. I think there is a bit of an upside for him in terms of where he goes, just because he's not the hardest throwing pitcher in the world. But man, it's been really impressive what he's been able to do. And I guess it's maybe unsurprising for people to see someone move to Wake Forest and have solid results. I mean, he spent 2 years at Missouri, where he pitched as a starter, had an ERA north of 6 in both those 2 years. Then he actually had a pretty solid 3-start stint in the Cape with Katuit. And now has been pretty strong with Wake Forest through 9 starts. It's 3.72 ERA through 38.2 innings, 67 punch outs, 18 walks.
With Lunsford, he was a guy, and it's to your point about Wake Forest, I mean, he had always kind of had intriguing stuff, even dating back to when he was a true freshman at Missouri. I'd seen a video of him on Twitter and I was like, who is this kid? Just with how he moves on the mound and what he was flashing, and unsurprisingly at Wake Forest, they were able to unlock that a little bit more. And kind of running through his arsenal a little bit, fastballs in the low 90s, but up to a 4, but it plays really well up in the zone. It's got a ton of ride and a ton of carry. And if he can locate it consistently in the top half, top third of the zone, I mean, he's pretty money up there. The key is just commanding it, to the extent where he's able to, get it up there with regularity, because it gets hit when it's in the bottom half of the zone. But for me, the secondaries are really appealing with him. It's a plus changeup. It's one of the better changeups, I think, collegiately in this year's class. It has a miss rate of 62% to this point. And then like Ianson, he's got 2 distinct breaking balls and a slider that's taken a real step forward year over year since last spring. And then a bigger kind of slower curveball that's got a ton of depth and a little bit of sharpness to it and downward bite. So I think the key for him, and it was a little bit of a hindrance, and it's been a hindrance for him kind of his entire career, and it's popped up at various times, is just continuing to compete around the strike zone and continuing to progress in the pitchability department. Because Had a rough go of it against Virginia Tech a few starts ago. That was just off the top of my head, and he had another rough outing in the wake of that. But he bounced back this weekend with a really, really impressive outing against a Florida State lineup that can swing it. So, I mean, he's got swing and miss stuff against both righties and lefties. He can get lefties out with that fastball changeup combo, two breaking balls. I think with you, as you said, there's a little bit of a ceiling and a cap to where he could go. But for me, fourth-ish round type of guy, I think pretty comfortably at this point. And he's got a handful of big starts ahead of him.
Hiring has changed. When we have an opening, we need a way to organize what quickly becomes a very complicated process. That's why we need Indeed. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. One of the things I love about Indeed is how it makes hiring so fast, because it organizes the candidates and allows me to set up every step of the process right within Indeed's website. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no reason to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/baseballamerica. Just go to Indeed.com/baseballamerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/baseballamerica. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, and maybe to like an analytically inclined team or team that really covets the riding life he's able to generate on his fastball would take him a little bit higher than that even. I would love to get updated like TrackMan data and get more specific information into his pitch shape, because it's almost shocking how much swing and miss he's able to generate with this sort of pitch mix and like the power to his pitch mix specifically. In the ACC, it's been really impressive. I'm assuming he has either a lot of deception or just creates a ton of movement on his pitches. I mean, he's gotten praise in the past for the way he kills spin on the changeup. You mentioned it's a really impressive pitch, and pairing the velocity separation with the I would imagine the vertical break between those two is pretty impressive as well. Last year, he averaged 21 inches of ride on the fastball. So yeah, he's just kind of a fun pitcher that's maybe an atypical pitch mix, but it is a four-pitch mix. He's throwing all those pitches over 10% of the time. And, yeah, I guess we'll see what happens with the strikes. He's never been a super crisp, really advanced strike thrower, but and he's been really good. And maybe the best jump in terms of just the effectiveness of the stuff year over year of any of the pitchers that I wrote about in this piece, which touches on 25 different names.
Yeah. Without a doubt. Are there any other arms that kind of stood out to you or you wanted to focus on and get into a little bit? Maybe two more, three more?
Yeah, let's go into... I'm trying to pick... I mean, I think there are two pitchers that seem just more different than they were. Like, that jumped out to me as like, wow, this is a completely different pitcher. I guess the first one is Jared Spencer, the left-handed pitcher at Texas, who was draft eligible a year ago. I believe he was drafted in the 14th round, didn't sign, and then came back to Texas. You can correct me if that round range is not accurate, but off the top of my head, I think that's what it was. But he has just looked like, and we mentioned this week one when he was at the Shriners College Classic in Texas at Globe Life, but he came out and was looking like a real starter with a legitimate changeup that we hadn't seen in the past. A year ago, he was essentially a two-pitch pitcher, threw his fastball and slider a vast majority of the time. And in pretty much every area that you could name for a pitcher, he has been better. He has added 2 miles per hour to his fastball. He's sitting 95.1. He's added nearly 5 ticks of velocity to his slider. Instead of a low to mid 80s slider a year ago, it is now a hard upper 80s slider. It's averaging north of 88 miles per hour. And seemingly he has developed a changeup overnight that on 16% usage has been a legitimate secondary to give him a full three-pitch mix. He's missing more bats. He's throwing more strikes. And he's doing it all while facing better competition. So, yes, Jared Spencer is going to be a little bit older than a lot of players in this class, but he is also a college left-hander with really impressive power on the fastball slider and now a changeup that I feel like you can have a lot of confidence in. It's been pretty shocking the development he's shown early this year and has just continued to maintain.
Yeah, and I think when talking about development too, I think to a lesser extent than someone like a Lunceford going to Wake Forest, with Max Wiener at Texas now taking the reins of the pitching staff, it obviously bodes well. It boded well for Spencer, but it bodes well really just for the program in general going forward. And I think we're seeing that in the effects of it immediately, not only with Spencer, but with other arms. They're throwing the ball really, really well as a team staff. But yeah, he's been excellent. And that kind of profile, I mean, a 6'3 lefty, an SEC starter, he was getting really, really impressive results, and especially last week against Georgia when there was a lot of heat there to see that series going 7 1/3 or 7 2/3, whatever it was, with a dozen or so strikeouts. I mean, that's a day one type of profile. And where last year he was mainly just a fastball slider guy, he's introduced in an emphatic way this really impressive mid to upper 80s changeup that's got hard late tumble to it. To go along with what I already thought was a plus slider, and the fastball as well has kind of taken a tick up in the right direction. He's sitting in the mid 90s, been up to 98 with life through the zone, and from a body perspective as well. Like, I think that there's some, you know, you could even add 5 to 10 plus pounds to his frame. So from a stuff standpoint, he's trending in the right direction. He's trending in the right direction in all facets. Like, he's a day one guy right now for me.
Yeah. And I would say, like, if he is able to add a little more strength, maybe fill out the frame, I would mostly want to see if he would be able to use that mass to try and take some effort off the delivery rather than even adding more power, because there is still a lot of effort, I think, in that delivery. It is very reliever-ish looking. His track record of throwing strikes is fringy at best. He's never had a single season where he's had a walk rate below double digits. To his credit, he is generating a 10.5% walk rate this year, which would be his career best after 3.5 years through with Indiana State and now one half of a season with Texas. So trending in the right direction, at least from last year to this year in the strikes department. But I think there's a lot to like with Jared Spencer. I mean, again, like, what, there's not a single area I feel like you could point to and say he's doing this worse than a year ago, or this is still a question mark. Like, it's just visually the delivery is effortful, and you would like it if you could see him throw a little bit better strikes. But I think it was already allowed 2-pitch mix a year ago, and now the fact that the changeup is real has been impressive.
Yeah, big time.
So I think he, in terms of like looking like a different pitcher, he might be the one guy who stands out the most. But the other pitcher who is at least worth mentioning here, and I'll definitely throw it to you again at the end if you've got another guy who stands out to you, but he's your kind of cheese ball. He's been your favorite. You take him really high in the draft. It feels like the more I look into this profile, the more I'm like, yeah, this is definitely a first rounder. Like, how is he not going to go in the first round? But that's Cade Anderson. I mean, he has really transformed himself in a number of different ways. This spring, a year ago in 2024, he was a reliever. He entered this spring with scouts really raving about the curveball that he threw. Scouting directors thought it was one of the better breaking balls in the class. He threw his fastball 70% of the time last year and his curveball 23% of the time. Now moving into a starter role, he has basically inverted the usage of his breaking balls. He's throwing a slider that has added nearly 5 ticks of velocity 27% of the time, and his curveball just 11% of the time. And if you had told me, hey, Cade Anderson is going to be using his curveball just 10% of the time, essentially, I would really wonder what had gone wrong with him, because I really think that pitch is a plus offering. It's got a ton of spin. It's got a ton of depth. It's a great swing and miss offering, but it really feels like that slider has helped him develop a more consistent breaking ball that he can land in the zone for strikes and just be more competitive as a strike getting secondary, and then he still has the breaking ball that is a great whiff getter. But the addition of that pitch and just what he's done performance wise as LSU's Friday night starter has been really impressive. He's taken a lot out of the fastball usage. He's throwing that pitch less than half the time. I think a common trend I noticed with a lot of these pitchers is as they're moving to either more of a full-time starter role or going from purely a reliever role to any sort of starter role, the fastball usage really gets dialed down, and it's nice to see a lot of these guys show more of a pitch mix, and that's definitely what Cade has done this spring. It's 47% fastball, 27% slider, 11% curveball, 14% changeup. So, I mean, for me, his best pitch might be his curveball, and he's using it fourth among his pitch types.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have a take holstered about Cade Anderson, and I'm...
Oh, let's go.
I think it's getting less hot by the week with every start, but he's SP2 for me right now.
Wow.
Personal board behind...
Would you take him inside the top 10 picks?
Yeah, I would.
Wow.
I just, in looking at the college class,
yeah,
and sort of circling way back to the murkiness of it, I would absolutely take him inside that top 10 to top 15. Like, he's a no doubt starter for me professionally, guy that can headline the rotation. You mentioned it's a legitimate four pitch mix, and you could stick probably a six, but you could stick a six on probably two of them with the fastball and the curveball for sure. And he rounds it out with potentially 255s and two above average pitches in his changeup and his slider, which has been a real revelation this year. The curveball has been like last year, that was his like bread and butter pitch. I mean, it's mm-hmm. a high spin. It still is. It still is a high spin offering with a ton of depth and bite to it. But you say he's throwing it just 11% of the time this year and is really up the usage on his slider and gone to that a whole lot. But the fastball is really impressive. From a velocity standpoint, it's not going to knock you off your chair or blow your socks off, but I mean, it sits 92 to 95. It's been up to 96 with plenty of life through the zone. And I think that
he's getting a 39% miss rate with the fastball, which is a great, if it wasn't for Liam Doyle, people would be like, wow, that miss rate is insane. But Liam Doyle has recalibrated everyone's like extremes of the fastball miss rate category.
Not only is it a 39% whiff, it's also a 31% in zone whiff rate on it, which is it's an ultra impressive mark. So again, there's just a ton to like with Anderson from an arsenal standpoint, from a strike standpoint. Like, the strike throwing has taken a real step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Since last spring, he's around the zone with all four of his offerings. He can land all four for strikes. When it comes to poking a hole in the profile with him, it's become increasingly harder and harder to do each week. Like, he checks almost every single box for me, at least. And this is a crazy take to throw out, and I might be, I don't know how much I'm drinking the Kool-Aid here. Like, how different is he right now than Jamie Arnold? Like, why, how far off is he? Like, why is Jamie Arnold ahead of him?
Yeah, I think in terms of stuff, if you feel that strongly, if you feel that strongly about the fastball, curveball with him, I think it's a pretty compelling case. I think you would say maybe like Arnold has a longer track record as a starter, yeah. But even then, like, Cade started off as a reliever, I believe, during his 2024 freshman season, then pitched his way into a starter role pretty quickly. I mean, he's had the same jump in strike throwing that Arnold himself had in his time at FSU. Arnold was not like a ultra command pitcher from day one. And I think on top of just the two pitch mix and what does the starter profile look like for Anderson, one of the questions with him was, what are the strikes going to be? And as we sit here recording this podcast, over eight starts, he's got a 2.85 ERA over 47.1 innings with a 6.3% walk rate, and he is throwing the fastball for strikes. It's a 65% clip, which is respectable. The slider for strikes, 71% of the time. The changeup for strikes, 72% of the time. I mean, even the curveball, which I'd cited as like a less consistent strike getting breaking ball, he's throwing that 61% of the time, which that as an overall strike rate for some pitchers in the class is what they're looking at. And for him, for that pitch with that depth and spin and movement profile, for him to just locate it that consistently, And it's not like he's getting a ton of chases on this pitch or on that pitch at this point. So it's not like a lot of those strikes are like out of the zone, terrible swings. He just lands it really consistently. It's been impressive to see what he's been able to do. So yeah, as you said, at SP2 is kind of shocking because for so long, like, it's just been Arnold and Bremner, but it's a left-handed pitcher with projection. He's got a complete four pitch mix and is doing it every night as a Friday night starter in the SEC. I think you're not going out on a crazy limb to say that.
Yeah, I guess that question, it'll answer itself one way or another over the course of the next couple of months. Cause I mean, he's got, as you said, as a Friday guy in the SEC, he's got another handful of massive series coming down mm-hmm. the pike. I mean, he goes to Auburn. He's got Tennessee, goes to College Station to take on A&M, Arkansas. And then that's not including however long LSU might last in the tournament, but man, mm-hmm. the projectability with him is just a cherry on top because there's room to fill out. There's room for him to get stronger, more physical. And with it, you could project potentially even
yep.
more of a tick up, particularly on his fastball. If you can just add 2-3 ticks to it, I think that would go a real long way. But it strikes with four pitches. It's whiffs with all four pitches. Easy delivery that he repeats really well. Kind of, he's shown really well under the brightest lights.
He'll be young for the class as a draft eligible sophomore, just 21 on draft day, and early in 21, I believe he turns 21 like a few days before the draft. At the moment, he's third in strikeout minus walk rate in the country among qualified Division I arms. It's a pretty unimpeachable overall profile at this point, I would say. Like, just trying to come up with like a but or a what or a huge question mark with him, there's not an obvious one that comes to mind for me.
Yeah, and I found myself getting progressively closer and closer to the camera as I got more fired up about it.
But Peter's ready to jump through the camera and draft him right now.
I'm with you. It'll be from an award standpoint, it'll be a fun literal arms race between him and Liam Doyle. For SEC and National Pitcher of the Year. And as far as the awards go, it's more based on like back of the baseball card stuff as opposed to
like draft status or projecting
status as a prospect, and they're pretty similar in that regard. So
maybe this is not correct, but I believe Cade Anderson so far has been a little bit more dominant in conference compared to Liam Doyle. He's coming off a 9-inning shutout with 14 punchies versus Oklahoma, but he really has one start that is not like really loud and electric. That was his 4.1 innings against Mississippi State 2 weekends ago. He struck out 5, walked 2, allowed 6 hits, 5 earned runs, and a trio of homers. Outside of that, it's been pretty lights out every week.
Yeah, and I think from a draft standpoint, and again, this is not a knock on Liam Doyle at all. He'll still go in a really good spot come July, I'm sure, but when comparing the two, if I'm an organization picking inside whatever range you want to call it, but when if I had a choice and it's, you know, pick Cade Anderson or Liam Doyle, I'm picking Cade Anderson and not even thinking twice about it.
Yeah, I think what immediately came to mind when you're doing that comparison is if we were looking for like the question marks with Liam Doyle, it's a lot easier to find those and multiple of them than it is for Cade Anderson. So if you just want a complete pitching profile, there's a lot of comfort there, I feel like. And we've seen it over and over again. The higher ups in these organizations, teams picking high, they love their college starters. And I think the fewer question marks you have with those profiles, the more confident you can feel just with their performance and what they've done. Again, it feels like a really safe profile at this point and still an exciting one.
Yeah. I'm with you all the way. In talking about it and just seeing the results week to week and just kind of seeing how everything is very slowly sort of falling into place, but maybe not because it's only getting more vague week to week, I think, because it's tough. I do not envy anyone picking at the top of this year's draft. But it's just, it kind of, you know, for the lack of star power, I'd say at the top, I do think that it is going to be a fun few months and a fun draft night because I really could, there are so many ways this thing could go.
Absolutely. I'll be sure to run your Cade Anderson SP2 take by a bunch of scouts and decision makers this week and carry and see what sort of feedback we get on that one, because I imagine it's going to be start becoming more of a common take, actually.
But, and it might be a cold take. I'd be curious to hear what they have to say, because maybe, you know, I'm out on an island and drinking the Kool-Aid a little too much on him. But yeah, he's really impressive. So I'd be curious to see what feedback you get in front of a lot of heat at the NHSI, which it will be an outstanding event. You're going to get a live look at Seth Hernandez.
Absolutely. Can't wait for that. So we'll be back next week to break that all down. But I think that's probably going to wrap it up for today's episode. Peter, anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, you had the plug last week, so I'll go back to it. But it's the same thing holds true this week as it does every other week. Just a slew of content over at baseballamerica.com. MLB season's underway. Minor league season is full steam ahead now. So whether you're an MLB fan, more so on the prospect side or the amateur side, there are pieces and podcasts and videos for whatever suits your fancy. So I couldn't recommend heading over to the site enough and getting a subscription, because as someone who was a subscriber before I was an employee, it was worth every single penny, because I can tell you firsthand that instead of doing homework and schoolwork, I was procrastinating on Baseball America, listening to Carlos and reading pieces that Josh and Jeff wrote and JJ. So very much worth it.
Awesome. Couldn't have said it better myself. So thank you guys for hanging out. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting Baseball America. We really appreciate it. You allow us to do what we do. So for Peter, I'm Carlos. See you next time, everybody.